Our reading this morning is Boundaries by my colleague Lynn Unger. The universe does not revolve around you. The stars and planets spinning through the ballroom of space dance with one another, quite outside of your small life. You cannot hold gravity or seasons. Even air and water inevitably evade your grasp. Why not then let go? You could move through time like a shark through water, neither restless nor ceasing, absorbed in and absorbing the native element. Why pretend you can do otherwise? The world comes in at every pore, mixes in your blood before breath releases you into the world again. Did you think the fragile boundary of your skin could build a wall? Listen. Every molecule is humming its particular pitch. Of course, you are a symphony. Whose tune do you think the planets are singing as they dance? The universe does not revolve around you, and you are a symphony. For your sake, the world was created. You are but dust and ashes. The theme for March is humility. There has not been a stampede of WWF members signing up to bring their creative spirit and wise thoughts to lead services this month, surprisingly. When looking at which service I might lead with Tracy, it came down to the first service in March on humility, or the first service in April, which happens to be Easter. Despite the complexities of leading an Easter service for a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, that did seem to be the clear winner. What would I possibly do with the theme of humility? As you use, we don't really lead with humility. And as Americans, we celebrate winners. The competent, capable, brilliant, beautiful go-getters. Not the humble, low self-esteem, underachieving, oversensitive weaklings. Of course, this has been taken to new extremes, and thankfully exposed for its hubris with the campaign and leadership of the current president. He's definitely not leading the effort to make America humble again. But after experiencing my knee-jerk resistance to the humility theme, I found myself getting intrigued. So clearly this is the one I picked, right? Why is humility the theme? What would I say about humility? What do I even know about humility? I could probably use some more humility. Why does humility get such a bad rap? And I think it's because it gets confused with humiliation or self-degradation, the idea of placing yourself below others. But the real sense of humility involves not putting yourself below others or above others, but recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of all people, which, by the way, includes you. You are special. You are a unique combination of talents, experiences, perspectives, and feelings that will never be seen again. And so is everyone else. We've all been given gifts. celebrate your gifts and celebrate the gifts of others just as much as your own. That's humility. I mean, all life is a gift. None of us is capable of generating the atmosphere to hold the air we need, or compelling the plants to grow to provide the nourishment we need. We celebrate these unearned gifts as you use with our appreciation for the interdependent web of which we are all a part. Humility and gratitude flow naturally from recognizing that we are blessed with gifts we did not earn. Now, the source of this blessing is less important to me than the fact of this blessing. It's tempting to me, and I think other UUs, to get caught up in resistance to a concept that some parental figure, God, has bestowed these blessings. So let us acknowledge that the source includes our genetics, our culture, the sum total of evolutionary development, the mysterious well of all creativity and creation, the natural flow of energy toward flourishing life, and we can get on and enjoy and celebrate these unearned gifts. I mean, I certainly did nothing to earn the lungs that inhale and exhale via my autonomous nervous system, efficiently absorbing the oxygen my body needs and releasing the carbon dioxide the plants need. I did nothing to earn this amazingly flexible and permeable covering for my entire body called skin, which has the power to reform itself after it's been damaged by a cut or a burn. I did nothing to earn this astounding brain, which processes the million pieces of sensory data to allow me to function in the world, to form conceptual ideas and express them through language. Now, I rarely get proud and pretentious about my lungs, but I am very attached to my brain, and I tend to take all the credit for what it produces. So what would be a more humble attitude toward my brain? Now, humility does not require me to diminish or dismiss its amazing capacity, because that would disrespect the blessing of this gift. So I want to celebrate and enjoy the gifts that flow from my brain. I want to discover what I can do with it and how I can contribute with it. And that's a different energy, appreciating and exploring the gift of my brain rather than being attached to and prideful about what my brain can do. And I think we get attached to our gifts and take credit for them because we have a sense that we have to earn our right to be here, to be here in this WOOF community, to belong to our families, to our workplaces, just to really get to stay here on the planet. The foundational idea here is that we live in a gift universe. We didn't earn being born. We didn't earn being fed as babies, having the earth to live on, the air to breathe, water to drink. Using our gifts so we get to stay feels different than letting our gifts flow through us and enjoying that experience of contributing to the flow of life. It's the difference between diligently writing and delivering this sermon with a determined effort to earn your respect and affection, and creatively exploring ideas through my writing, which I believe can contribute to my own growth and to your growth, with a curiosity about what impact hearing these words in this moment might or might not have on any of us. So there's a subtle difference between attached to our gifts and being appreciative and enjoying our gifts. But it's not easy. Back to my brain. One of the things that I'm typically proud of about my brain is how quick it is. And I usually take credit for this and get frustrated with others whose brains work at a different pace and style, and I equate my brain's speed with intelligence and internally declare myself smarter than others. Ideas just come to me quickly. I don't actually know how I do that. Yet, I take pride in it. So before delivering a leadership workshop, I'm sitting in the hotel restaurant with my colleague, and we're thinking, okay, how can we make tomorrow morning's activities more effective? I present my brilliant idea for an exercise, and I'm ready to just add it to the agenda. And Nick, my colleague and partner for the workshop, then wants me to go through it step by step, questioning what might be confusing, considering five other ways we might do it. And I sit there fuming at how long this is taking and judging him for being so obtuse. But of course, we end up with a much more effective exercise because of his diligence and questions. Because he was sharing his gifts, and I was able to share mine. So it would have been a really different experience if I could have been grateful for my brain giving me that idea, and then just be curious about what are we going to do with this idea? Not attached to it as evidence of my intelligence, part of my identity. And then I can hear Nick's questions not as an attack on me, which threatens my right to be on the team and maybe even my right to stay on the planet, but him bringing his gifts to the mix for us to discover what emerges from this interplay. I can hold it lightly without this tight grip of pride and identity. I can treat my idea and my quick thinking brain as something to enjoy and explore. This is humility, and it brings a freedom and an ease which I enjoy. But I succumb to that pride, that arrogance, that belief that I have to earn my place. So what do I do with that? Call it sinful and denounce myself? Rush to confess my shortcomings? Lament my shameful nature? I'm guessing we're all answering no to these questions, these options. But just take a moment and notice if within that no is a whiff of superiority to those who might engage in these very practices. I think this is where we as UUs can sometimes not be so humble. Saying no to the commonly understood concept of sinfulness and the accompanying shame, which I wholeheartedly say no to, does not get me off the hook for my own harmful tendencies. So that word sin, I think, is especially tricky because so often it has been used to instill shame, to create a sense of inherent wrongness rather than a sense of inherent worth and dignity. So the Hebrew word chet, which is typically translated as sin, actually holds an idea of missing the mark, like an archer's bow falling short of or veering away from the target. And that's a definition of sin that fits, that I could get interested in. We each have a sense of our target, of living a life aligned with our values. I need and want to have space to notice where I've missed the mark and feel my regret, even my grief, about being untrue to my values and out of sync with my vision. So I invite us to take a few moments together. If you're comfortable closing your eyes or just lowering your gaze, and be present with yourself for the following meditation. We are gathered here together as people committed to promoting a world full of peace, equity, and compassion. Yet we often fail to live into this vision. Despite our best hopes, we give in to cynicism, believing that idealism is foolish and realism requires us to accept the status quo. Despite our genuine commitments to others, we become overwhelmed with the challenges of our individual lives and retreat into self-sufficiency and separation. Despite our longing to connect with compassion, we greet people with whom we disagree with judgment and even ridicule and think of ourselves as superior. Despite our pledges to pursue peace, we resort to domination and force to meet many of our needs. as individuals in relationships at home and work, as consumers benefiting from unjust labor practices, as Americans accepting the use of military force to achieve national aims. Despite our desire to practice gratitude and generosity, we live with fear of not having enough and lose sight of the many comforts available to us in this society at this point in history, and instead hoard what we have and seek to acquire more in an effort to feel secure. In these and many other ways, we fall short of where we aim. Let us feel our regret, even our grief, for missing the mark so often. And let us appreciate the beauty and the purity of our values and our commitments. May we honor and acknowledge these values at the same time we acknowledge our limitations. May we treat ourselves with love, forgive ourselves for mistakes, and begin again with tenderness. May we stay open to the beauty and wonder of life. May we remember the interconnectedness of all life. May we remember the transformative power of just being with each other. With a deep breath, appreciating that you are not alone, you are here in community with others who have missed the mark. Let us open our eyes and be here together. My hope is that you found some value in that prayerful experience. Perhaps a sense of relief at acknowledging where you fall short. A sense of renewed commitment to your values. A sense of compassion, recognizing our shared human frailties. Tenderness towards ourselves and others lets us compassionately and effectively work through and process our own and others' failures. Failures to live up to our values. And also to let us recognize how we're embedded in systems that dramatically constrain our options, our capability and capacity for living the life that we dream is possible. I'm hoping you had a different experience with that prayerful meditation than if I had announced, "Let us now offer a prayer of confession, lamentation, and repentance." But that's actually what we just did. I attended a liberal Christian seminary, and one of the benefits of that was gaining an appreciation for practices I previously imagined did not have any value, like confession and lamentation. I still have a physical reaction against words like sin and repentance because of how they are typically used. But I now have alternate interpretations of those words and valuable real experiences of the practices like we just had together, which lets me recognize myself in the shared human experience of regret for my thoughts and actions. So I found a path to humility, which is what many religious traditions offer in their way. So I'm open to that, but I haven't turned off my rational mind, and I still have strong personal stands against what I consider to be harmful theology. I believe that the shame and self-rejection that flows from a focus on sinfulness as a defining human characteristic is deeply damaging. but I want to be aware that I can be committed to my point of view and still show humility by appreciating the legitimacy of other points of view given that person's experience, knowledge, education, perceptions. I can own my own perspective as mine and not the one and only right perspective. And I can humbly appreciate the many gifts that equipped me to reach my opinion, rather than arrogantly dismiss another perspective as simple, naive, essentially wrong. Because one of those gifts is my capability for critical thinking, which I think many of us share, and it's part of what attracted us to Unitarian Universalism. But if I think about that, that was a gift given to me by the capacity of my brain, which I've already told you how brilliant that is, and all of the education that I got in my household from my well-educated parents, the high-quality schooling that I had. It's been reinforced in my social settings, in my work settings. It's gained me admiration and respect to be a critical thinker. In other contexts, it could have gained me rejection. It's supported by my access to and my affinity for fairly sophisticated and nuanced media sources like the New York Times on my iPhone. So while I can still hardly affirm my theological stand against original sin as a theological concept, I can't trust that I would have reached my conclusion in a different family or a different culture. And I cannot claim it is the truth. So I think humility is the difference between standing up for what I believe in versus the hubris of saying this is what should be true for all people for all time. So I have to say that I get a little twinge when we read in our order of service the first affirmation with the word true in it, that we open our mind to what is true. Like, do we mean true, like true north? Like some deeper principle that like is not really knowable but is worth pursuing? Or do we mean true like the opposite of false? Like I'm right and the other ways of thinking about this are all wrong. So one thing I appreciate about Judaism, which like one of our kids, I have a strong affinity for Judaism. In fact, a friend called me psycho-Semitic once. And I married a fabulous Jewish man. One of the things I really appreciate about Judaism is in one of their sacred texts called the Talmud, it's actually a book of the teachings gathered from different rabbis over time, and there's a strong history and culture of debate. And then there is some position that kind of, you know, is the one that is agreed upon as the position. But the minority positions, the ones that didn't win, are included in the Talmud. And you continue to study these minority positions for the wisdom within them. So there is not the right answer that is determined, like there was at the Council of Nicaea, where the Nicene Creed was created in the Christian tradition. So in this way, I think that we UUs are like Jews, that no question is disallowed. However, in our culture, we're taught to seek victory over others, right? To win. We live in a well-established system of patriarchy. And this is, so for it, we have our personal hubris, we have our Unitarian Universalist tendencies towards hubris, and we live in this culture that is captured in this hubris based on principles of separation and control. Separation from self, from other, from life, from nature. So we've got structures that we've created over millennia based on dominance and submission. And this worldview that I reject justifies them as necessary because we have to overcome our basic nature and nature, which is seen as separate from us. So this seems to me the ultimate hubris, to think we can control and change how nature works, bend it to defy its own laws and deliver what we want when we need it. So our capitalist system produces this endless pressure to grow the economy, right? Economic growth, economic growth. But that's not natural, constant growth. It's impossible. It's like only inhaling and never exhaling. That doesn't work. It lacks any humility and appreciation for the gift of life with its sustaining and sustainable ebbs and flows. Our systems try to convince us to convert more and more of nature into some kind of product, and more of human relationships into services, all of which can be paid for. But this ignores and repudiates the basic flow of life, that babies are born with total trust, that the world is ready to provide all they need with love and care. They're not helpless weaklings draining us of our resources. Yet sometimes we see them as potential future resources, right? So maybe they're worthy of some investment. But what's really happening is the baby is an expression of the creative life force that's ready to be sustained by the biological need for love and the sacred expression of love. Love is our birthright, every single person's birthright. And humility is appreciation and celebration of the gifts that are given to us as human beings, born with this amazing life force onto this living planet. And patriarchy and capitalism work against this natural love and humility. These systems contain the hubris to go against natural laws, and because of that, they have to rely on force and coercion, because otherwise we wouldn't do it, right? To overcome these systems, we must be grounded in humility, accepting and celebrating ourselves and others. Gift of life, the gift of loving ourselves. With humility and love, we can connect to nature with reverence, connect fully with ourselves to experience freedom, connect with others to have a sense of belonging, and connect with all of life, to naturally care for the whole of life, with humble acceptance of our own impermanence and our own vital.
We now have about 5 minutes for questions and comments for conversation, if you would like to ask them of Reverend Leslie, and I will bring the mic around.
I just want to thank everybody, you and our special music and everything. I think this is one of the most moving services we've had in a long time.
Thank you. Thank you to David.
I'm challenging people's hubristic ideas. I like to stir things up sometimes and enjoy the results, but I feel strongly that the Clown Prince, as my sister calls him, is making America great again, because he's encouraging us to start a revolution in a turn of phrase, and that is fantastic. So let's make America great again.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, I know. I love how it's exposing some things. And so I think it is accelerating our response.
I'm Charlie Schubert. My definition of humility is like this: learn how to love, learn how to be loved.
I love that. Learn how to love. Learn how to be loved.
I probably won't be the last to say that was the greatest humility sermon ever, and you should be really proud. And Dave, that was the greatest humility song ever. But One thing it made me think, I was reflecting on the sort of there seems to be a conflict. There isn't really, but there seems to be a conflict between being humble and doing great things. And I was thinking, well, a great actor who has done a great acting job and will win an Oscar for it, what made it great is that you come out of the movie not remembering who played that part. And a great author whose book changed your life is one where you remember the book and you don't remember who wrote it. And as an author or an actor, having your fans not remember your name would be the greatest thing in the world. You've really done it then.
Well, I think what that brings up is this idea of letting the gifts flow through us rather than thinking that we are the source of them.
I just want to add my voice. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. It feels really sweet to deliver a service again.
I'd just like to say that yesterday Dave and I went to a memorial service where we sang For the Beauty of the Earth, and then we went and had dinner with our children, and we sang Lean on Me. So I'm struck by the fact that we're not the only ones thinking about these things.
I really do think that a really big part of what we do as a fellowship is to resonate. And so I really sometimes overdo my support for passing the microphone, but it's so great to hear that part of the resonating that happens during microphone time.
So the twin ideas of humility and hubris always bring imposter syndrome to mind, right? Which is definitely a word that I feel, or a phrase that I have felt strongly about in my, and so I kind of feel like that's hitting both sides of the coin, right? Because you're supposed to feel like you're really doing a great job, but at the same time you're like, wow, I totally don't deserve this particular thing. So it's like you're hitting both humility and hubris at the same time.
Yeah, and I think, but again, I think for me this idea of gift and not having to like have it be my self-identity and the way that I earn my right to be here relaxes that imposter syndrome, because I, like, there are gifts I have and there are gifts that you have, and thank goodness you have them because I sure don't. And I'm not trying to be all things because that's impossible. Yeah. That imposter syndrome is a difficult one.
I think this kind of relates. My daughter is going to be 11, and she this year she's gone through some mental illness, but also she's wants to become a boy, and we're at that point where she's now no longer wants us to call her, and you know, so, and it's, you know, 10 years of having a daughter, so you know she'll be elbowing me every time I'm talking about it, and so it's been a humbling experience both for me and her, because I've had to say, you know, you have to give me some time to adjust, and you can't be mad when I do it, but I also will try my best not to do it. So it's that balancing act of trying to figure out, you know, learning from each other. It's been a really interesting time.
And treating each other with tenderness and each treating yourself with tenderness. It's a big change.
Great, that is all the time we have.